The Giants finish off a 6-1 road trip by winning 2 out of 3 in Arizona, and now a 500 record is within reach for this team. So we're not going to throw a parade if they get to 500, but at the same time, they have things to play for individually and as a team. So we'll talk about what those things are and how they can achieve them next.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily San Francisco Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. My name is Ben Caspick, and on this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also simple, passionate, and accessible to all. I'm a former contributor for the baseball statistics and analysis websites Beyond the Box Score and Rotographs. I've been podcasting about the Giants since 2015, and I'm a lifelong fan. Thanks for making Locked On Giants your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. And coming up on today's show, we've got these quotes from Evan Longoria talking about how, first of all, that he likes what he's seeing from this team, and that the message has been, and he's talking about it like the message from himself and from the coaches. So it kind of seems like Evan Longoria taking on a serious leadership role with this team down the stretch is just to not mail it in and to figure out what it is that you're playing for here, even if it's a selfish goal, like making more money next year and winning a job on this team next year. And so I wanted to look at the players who are playing for something and what exactly it is that they're playing for and how they're doing in that run. And I mean, Evan Longoria is a guy who is absolutely playing for something himself. And what he's playing for, he's made it pretty clear that he's hoping to be back with the Giants next year. And the reality of that contract is it's a $13 million club option, but it doesn't stop there. It's a $13 million club option with a $5 million buyout, effectively making it an $8 million decision for the Giants. And he came up with a big hit in this series in Arizona. He was pinch hitting in the finale with the bases loaded and one out against Reyes Maranta in the eighth inning, and he came up with a big two-run hit that essentially won the game for the Giants. And in this season, he's only played in 85 games, played in just 81 last year, so kind of a similar year in terms of playing time and really in terms of production. 13 homers last year, he's got 12 this year. 112 weighted runs created plus last year. It's 111 this year. About 1.5 Fangraphs wins above replacements in each of the last 2 years in about half a season. And so when he's been on the field, he's actually been pretty productive. And so this question about the club option is a more difficult decision than you might think, particularly because of the buyout being $5 million. That's pretty hefty for a buyout. And I would not be shocked if they did pick this up. Am I necessarily in favor of that? It's hard to say. He's a very fringe case in my opinion, but you know, he is going to be 37 years old in October, but he's playing for that. He's trying to prove that that the team should pick up that option. And he's been pretty productive when he's been on the field, and he is not the only guy playing for something here. How about Lamont Wade Jr., who's like leading off for the Giants every day? We're going to tie all of these guys in with things they did in this road trip, going 6-1 and making a 500 record within reach. If they just go 6-3 or better, they'll finish 500 or better, which again, we're not going to throw a parade for that. But still, I think having these types of goals, I believe Longoria is right. It helps you stay motivated and intense and to have intensity in this final stretch of games, just 9 games left for the Giants this year. But Lamont Wade Jr., absolutely playing for something. He's one of these guys, we've been discussing him a lot recently. He's out of minor league options. He was out of options this year, so he'll obviously be out of options next year as well. And he is a guy who's going to be entering, is it the first year of arbitration? Yeah, he'll be entering his first year of arbitration eligibility. So not only out of options, but also due to start earning more than the league minimum salary. And for Wade, it just hasn't been a good year. He's played in a similar amount of games and plate appearances as Evan Longoria, But in that time, just an 89 weighted runs created plus, just 0.1 Fangraphs wins above replacement. And so when we're talking about how the Giants have to improve this offseason, certain guys are going to have to be turned over. There aren't that many players who are just outright reaching free agency. You've got more guys who are like under team control, but who are non-tender candidates, such as Lamont Wade Jr. And so he made a really nice catch in this series in Arizona, like a game-saving type of catch in right field. He also was grimacing like every time he swung the bat. And so clearly something going on with him health-wise. And while Longoria is kind of doing everything he can to make the case that he should be brought back, the reason he's more of a question is because it is $8 million. For Wade, he's not going to make $8 million, but he is going to earn something and take up a valuable roster spot. And so for me, he's kind of, I don't want to say failing the test, but he's looking to me like a guy that you don't necessarily bring back next year. Does that necessarily mean a non-tender? No, because you could tender him a contract and trade him. I do think he has some trade value, given what he was able to do last year. On a team that is not in the position that the Giants are in, which is that they're trying to win now, definitely going into next year, they feel like they must play a lot better and make the playoffs, I think. You can't necessarily just devote a roster spot to a guy who could be something, but just hasn't been all year. And for Wade, if you look at the numbers, still just really not hitting left-handed pitching. He never has in his career. So we talk about needing less platoons, fewer platoons. This is a guy who stands out. He's done well historically against right-handed pitching, but he just has not hit left-handed pitching and doesn't necessarily provide all that much defensive value either. Has played a lot of first base the last couple of years where he's been pretty solid. But in the outfield, I don't know. I guess the numbers are decent for Wade, a little bit below average maybe in the outfield, maybe a little more than below than a little below average. But still, definitely Wade is playing for something, and it's noteworthy that he's leading off. I think they just want to give him as many at-bats as possible to try to prove himself. So really, he is playing for something. And the next guy, how about Mike Yastrzemski? I mean, we have been discussing him as a fringe non-tender candidate, but I think this week put that to rest. He has had a good road trip. He's really hit in Colorado and Arizona. 333 average, 385 on base, 792 slugging, a 458 isolated power during this brief little stretch of games in Colorado and Arizona. And for Yaz, I mean, because he does provide defensive value, he does run well, which is not a strength of Wade. Then you add that all together with what has been roughly league average offense overall from Mike Yastrzemski, and it's still almost, he'll probably end up with about two Fangraphs wins above replacement, which is worth quite a bit more than what Yastrzemski will be paid next year in his second year of arbitration eligibility. And so I think Yaz is playing for more mentally going into the offseason just to feel better about his season and to prove to himself that he can still hit in this league because it was that deep of a slump for that many consecutive months. But to come out of it the way that he has, his swings have looked much better. It's just relieving for him, I would imagine, and for fans of the Giants, like to know that this guy still has that ability in there. And I'm almost certain that they're going to tender him a contract. He's an important guy in the clubhouse, to the front office, like the communication. He brings intangibles as well, is what I'm trying to say. And so I think it's been a great finish for Mike Yastrzemski. Hopefully he can keep it going. There's a lot of other guys who are playing for something. How about Carlos Rodon, who didn't have his best outing, but man, he might be playing for the most of any of these players in the last couple weeks here. So more about what these guys are playing for in just a minute, but first, these days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. I've used this myself as a candidate in the past, and I really love the simplicity, and what I love most is simple tools like screening questions that make it easy to focus on the candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. I find this to be great, and I think it's mutually beneficial because I can show off my skills right away and stand out versus you know, anybody who applies. These screening questions do a great job. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonmlb. That's linkedin.com/lockedonmlb to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. All right, as promised, we're going to keep running through some of the more high-profile kind of people who are playing for things. We've also got news, you know, roster moves. We had Shelby Miller, for example. A lot of these bullpen guys, I think, have done a really nice job and are carving out roles for themselves next year. Shelby Miller is actually a free agent at the end of the year. But, I mean, Scott Alexander, he opened the game on Sunday and just continues to do an excellent job and can be brought back next year. So a lot of these bullpen guys are playing for a role on next year's team, and a lot of them have stepped up. And then we've also got Casey Schmidt, big news on Giants prospect Casey Schmidt earning a promotion to AAA. So we'll discuss that a little bit later as well. But I mentioned Carlos Rodon. I mean, this guy, he's already done enough, right? Like he could just, they could say, look, his nail is bothering him. We're going to shut him down just because of the nail. But, you know, what he's playing for is the ultimate individual reward. And that is because he is going to reach free agency in the offseason. He has this player option for $22.5 million that will be a formality to reject. Doesn't mean he doesn't want to be here. It just means he can do much better than 1 year, $22.5 million in the open market. He's in line for over a $100 million contract. Will the Giants be the team that gives it to him? I have no idea. I tend to lean against it simply because I thought that we basically had this exact same conversation about Kevin Gausman last year, and Gausman said they didn't even make him an offer. I've said repeatedly that I think it was because, look, it's a long story. I think it doesn't mean they had no interest in Gausman. It meant, I think, that they knew he was going to get long-term, a long-term deal, and they didn't want to do long-term. And so for Rodon, that's why I say, I don't know, maybe not. And you also want to leave room for the Kyle Harrisons of the world on next year's team. I think they need a frontline arm. I think it would be a good thing because they currently have a frontline arm in Rodon and they're still not very good, right? They're still like roughly a 500 team even with Rodon. And so if you lose him, it's more you either need to sign him or replace him and then add some superstar type talent, which is a tough ask, a tall task indeed. But you know, he's dealing with this fingernail thing. He wasn't great in this start in Arizona, but hopefully the nail calms down and he can make his last couple starts. But we shall see. It's the ultimate salary drive for Rodon. He's already like 99% of the way there. It's just basically stay healthy is what he's playing for the rest of the way. Now, Alex Cobb not playing for anything because he's under contract for next year and a club option for the year after that. But he did not have his best start here in Arizona. The defense kind of let him down again. How about Joc Pederson? I was a little bit surprised that he wasn't in the lineup against a right-handed pitcher on Sunday, and he also didn't appear as a pinch hitter. So I don't know if he's dealing with something physically. I didn't see an update on him. I was a little bit surprised that he wasn't the one who pinch hit for Ford Proctor, who, by the way, got his first major league hit, who replaced Luis Gonzalez on the roster as Gonzalez was put on the injured list, and Gonzalez was playing for something, playing for a spot on next year's team, because he's going to be out of options as well. But Joc Pederson is playing for a contract. He is a free agent at the end of the year. I was just discussing with someone that he's someone you might have to think about giving the qualifying offer to. Ultimately, I decided he's not going to get the qualifying offer, in my opinion. It's going to be around $18 million on a one-year offer, and I think that that's too much. But is he in line for a multi-year deal, and there's some benefit as a team to getting a player on a one-year deal as opposed to giving out a multi-year deal? But there does seem to be interest in bringing him back. Maybe the Giants are not showing their cards and threatening that they will give him the qualifying offer, but threatening's kind of too strong of a word. But Pederson, overall, has done well in his role. We've said this a number of times this year, but what he does is hit right-handed pitching, and hit right-handed pitching he has, but all in all, just 1.5 Fangraphs wins above replacement, which comes in below guys like Brandon Crawford even, because Pederson has not been good defensively. not been good on the bases, and not been good against left-handed pitching. So when you add it all up, he's really good at one thing. And I think that a smart team like the Giants can kind of take advantage of that one real impact skill that he has. But at the same time, overall, it's just not the most valuable picture in the world because you're just in so many areas not providing value. But if you just kind of, you know, the DH exists in the NL now, and it's possible that you kind of have him as your primary DH in a platoon, because while they need fewer platoons, they don't need zero platoons. I think platoons are kind of a necessity because you're not going to go out there and sign 9 Aaron Judges, right? It's just not going to happen. And so you've got maybe you've got 3, 4, 5 everyday players, and hopefully they go out in the offseason and add some impact everyday players, but then the rest of your lineup needs to be platooned, in my opinion. And Peterson really can do that against righties. Actually, when I look at the numbers, he's been decent against left-handed pitching this year, but I don't know. I mean, it's a small sample. Single-season platoon splits are always a small sample. In his career, he's got a 72 weighted runs created plus against lefties, and against righties, that number is 125. So a big gap there. He's playing for a contract, so he hasn't necessarily been super hot lately, but these last 9 games could make a real difference for him. Hopefully he's okay. Like I said, he did not play in the finale on Sunday, even though there was a righty on the mound. Highly unusual. So anyway, coming up in just a minute, we'll discuss some of the last guys like Luis Gonzalez, who unfortunately goes on the IL. And I also want to mention the significance of Casey Schmidt being promoted to AAA with just a few games left in the AAA season. But first, all right, as promised, we're going to talk about some of the last few players who are really playing for something here. We've got guys like Tommy La Stella, who I would say are playing for something, but they put him on the IL with these neck spasms. I don't know if that's true or not. We didn't really hear complaints about that until just randomly he goes on the IL with it. But he may have played his last game in a Giants uniform, in my opinion. Again, I hate to say that. Don't root for a guy to lose their job. He is guaranteed to make $11.5 million next year. Giants owe it to him whether or not they cut him. But looks like a sunk cost at this point. It's just a very disappointing couple of years in San Francisco for La Stella. But turning the page, a couple of arbitration-eligible players. Jacob Junis, playing for a spot on next year's team. It really was a rough stretch for Junis going into yesterday. But yesterday, he had a really nice game. The Giants opened with Scott Alexander and Harleen Garcia covering 2 2/3. And then Junis came in and went 5 1/3, allowed only 4 hits and a walk, 1 earned run, and got 7 strikeouts. So it was a big step in the right direction for Junis, who will probably get 2 more appearances on the year. And I think overall, the season has been good enough for him, absolutely, to warrant him coming back next year in his last year of arbitration eligibility, when he'll be in line for a salary of maybe about $2.5 million. It's a very reasonable price to pay for a guy who can basically fill the same type of role he's filled for the Giants this year. And I think he's been a nice clubhouse presence as well. And then we look at some other arbitration eligible guys. J.D. Davis, absolutely playing for a job on next year's Giants team. He's under club control for 2 more years through arbitration and in line for a salary raise, as arbitration guys always are each and every year, as long as they're on the field and doing anything at all. So, I don't know, roughly $3.5 million or so, maybe $4 million for J.D. Davis next year. It's a little more fringe than you might think, simply because not a great defender. What exactly is his role? I happen to think that he could be a nice player to kind of have in the mix. I want to say that he still can be optioned. Not that you would necessarily want to do that, but if you needed to, if he was struggling or whatever, he is a guy who still can be optioned next year. And I don't know, he had a really nice game on Sunday, had 4 hits, including a massive oppo shot against Mark Melanson into the pool. So that was really impressive. I think he's doing, like I said, he's playing for something, playing for a job, and he could absolutely kind of tip the scales in one direction by having performances like that over the last 9 games. So, I don't know. The other guys, I guess, are, it's mostly just Luis Gonzalez. We've got plenty of guys who are like safe and are just playing for numbers, I guess, and playing for, you know, Logan Webb is first year arbitration eligible and he's playing for that first salary, but he's done such a good job that it's already, like I said, with Rodon, it's 99% of the way there in terms of evaluating his season. Luis Gonzalez playing for a spot on next year's team. He, like Lamont Wade Jr., is a guy who cannot be optioned next year and is kind of fringe and hasn't necessarily performed all that well. The defense hasn't been great, and the offense overall now on the season has been below average. But if you look at the numbers against right-handed pitching, he's done a pretty good job. And so if you had to choose, if it came down to Wade or Gonzalez, it becomes somewhat of a difficult choice, and I don't know exactly what they would do, but it might come down to that. They might non-tender both of them, or they might just non-tender one of them. But I have a hard time seeing Wade and Gonzalez on next year's opening day roster, both. Maybe neither, but maybe one, but it's hard for me to see both, especially if you're assuming Yastrzemski is also back. But Gonzalez is a year or two or three behind Wade in terms of service time. So Wade is going to be eligible for arbitration for the first time next year. Gonzalez has three more years of pre-arbitration eligibility. And so that might tip the scales in favor of Luis Gonzalez, but he goes on the IL with this low back strain. But still, a pretty solid showing for him in his first kind of extended period of major league performance. He showed some upside, and the numbers against righties, like I said, have been pretty solid for the whole year. So lastly, I just want to mention the fact that Casey Schmidt, who doesn't get a lot of attention as a top prospect, certainly in the, you know, in all of baseball, but even within the Giants organization, he wasn't kind of entering the year. Fangraphs had him 16th, but I think he's 16th on the Giants. I think he's shot way up higher than that, and he has reached AAA. He started the year in high A, had a 132 weighted runs created plus in 93 games, hit 17 home runs, very modest strikeout rate of 22.5%, walk rate of 11%, promoted to double A and had a 144 weighted runs created plus, inflated by a 432 average on balls in play for sure, but still, even if you reduce that to a more modest level, it's still solid numbers. And for Schmidt, it's not just about the offense. In fact, the offense is kind of gravy because what he is an excellent, and when I say excellent, I mean elite, game-changing, one of the best in the minors defenders at third base. And the fact that he's reached AAA now, they promote him to AAA when there's just, what, four games remaining in the AAA season, is a big deal because it sets him up to open there next year. And then you've got a guy who is on the doorstep of the major leagues, literally just close physically in proximity to Oracle Park, probably starting the year there. And if he starts hitting well, it's a lively offensive environment, then we could see Schmidt pretty early on in the 2023 season. And we've got, you know, Kyle Harrison did what he did in double A, spent a lot of time there and dominated. And so he's going to be, you know, he might start in AAA next year as well. And then you've suddenly, some of your better prospects are close to arriving at the major league level and could make a real impact starting next year. And so I do believe finally next year is when we start to see some impact talent show up from the minor league system. And it's been a long wait, but some guys have really gotten closer, and Schmidt is one of the biggest success stories of the year in the Giants organization. So anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thanks again for making Locked On Giants your first listen every day. Now make your second listen the Locked On MLB podcast. MLB expert Paul Francis Sullivan brings humor, passion, and unique perspective on every team and the biggest stories around the league. Follow the number one daily league-wide podcast, Locked On MLB, on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. Once again, my name's Ben Kaspic. Check me out on Twitter at Ben Kaspic, KASPICK. If you like this show, please smash that thumbs up button, 5 stars, whatever you can do. Thank you in advance. And thank you to everyone who's done so already. Can't wait to be with you again tomorrow. We're going to be doing a mailbag, so look out on Twitter for the prompt. Thanks again for listening. You are now Locked On Giants.